Welcome to the OnFit Podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Very pleased today to be introducing our speakers on the subject of smarter cities. We have Julian Vella, the co-head of China Global Infrastructure at KPMG, and Zheng Yu, professor at the School of International Relations and Public Affairs at Fudan University. I must admit, this is a subject that I'm not expert in, and I'm lucky to have these two on hand to educate me and hopefully the rest of us. If I could begin perhaps with Zheng Yu, please could I ask you to help me understand at a very simple level the difference between a charter city and perhaps a special economic zone?
Thank you very much, Tamara, for inviting me to this podcast. I think this is a very interesting topic. The two concepts, I think, as special economic zones has been implemented all around the world. It's taken different forms. You know, there's a mixed record of their performance. While the charter city, it's a relatively new concept. It's a largely still a proposal rather than the reality. So I think that's the but there's a potential for the charter city to play in this developing world. Okay, so I think that's just gonna get to this concept. So.
No, thank you, Professor. And Julian, I don't know whether you have any views on the distinctions between charter cities and special economic zones.
Well, I think what Mr. Yu has said is right, and it's actually quite interesting because I think, as you said, there are a lot of special economic zones in existence at the moment in various countries, many, many developing countries, but not just developing countries. But I don't think there actually is a charter city as such yet that fulfills all of the or meets the various criteria that you mentioned. And that to me is quite interesting. I mean, when you look at some cities around the world, they have one or two of the characteristics of a charter city, but not all of the characteristics. So for example, Hong Kong, a city that I spend a lot of my time in, you would hardly say that's a new city, but it is a city that actually effectively operates in a sort of a semi-autonomous way, using its own local, political, and legal systems, right? As does Macau, for example. So, I mean, that's the sort of the principle around a sort of almost autonomous system that enables business to develop and grow. And then you have other cities. And I'll use an example of a city I know reasonably well, and that's Songdo in South Korea, which is a new city, was planned, has developed, depending upon your views, pretty successfully over the last 15 years, now has a permanent population, I think, of something like 120,000 to 130,000 people. But it doesn't have the other characteristics of a charter city, which is separate political and legal system, right? It sits within the broader, I think it's the broader Incheon regional council or whatever it may be. So there are cities that display some of the characteristics, but I don't think, Mr. Yu, that there are any cities that are actually what you would call truly a charter city yet, right?
Absolutely. I think it's still kind of like a concept or proposal. I think it's there's some examples were raised about the model for this, the charter city, like Singapore, Hong Kong, were not, fits into the definition of the charter city because they are more like a historical accident, right? I think it's rather than a real plan of the city. Romer's initial idea, original idea, I think is he also mentioned about the Shenzhen, which is the first special economic zone in China, as a model for this, the future charter city. But Shenzhen itself, it's actually, it doesn't fit in the definition because it's a still administrative unit within the sovereign territory, unit, right? It's part of China and it doesn't, having its own legal or, political system. So I think that's a key distinction between a special economic zone and charter city. I think I can also elaborate more a little bit about the Shenzhen. I think this is kind of like arguably the most prominent example of the successful special economic zones, right? So I think it's a Shenzhen established as a special economic zone in 1980. So it's about like 4 decades ago. Today, when we actually look at Shenzhen, you know, it's a big metropolitan with more than 13 million people, right? You know, when it was first established, it was only a small fishing village with 13,000 people. So I think that's a huge change. Even we look at the Shenzhen, you know, over the last 4 decades, its GDP has increased by 14,000 times, and its population has increased by 42 times. So, which I think it's also make its per capita GDP increased by, you know, 340 times, which is about the twice as much as the China's national GDP growth rate. So I think that the Shenzhen is clearly, it's a very successful case of the special economic zone. But I'm not sure about whether, you know, its own success as a special economic zones could be contributed to it, all those kind of features of this, you know, the charter city, which I think it's, will argue that, you know, they will need to have a being separate legal or a system to, or institutions, to rule the city. I think Shenzhen's success could actually has more to do with its own. I think it's two different type of the people. I think it's one, it's about the overseas Chinese, what we'll call it, the diaspora Chinese, which actually invested, you know, heavily into, you know, the mainland China, not just only in Shenzhen, about actually, since the beginning of the China's, the economic reforms, about like 70% of the foreign investment in China was actually invested by those Chinese diaspora from Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore, or, you know, Southeast Asia. And I think the second group of the people, I think some one which also contribute to the Shenzhen success, it's the millions of the migrant Chinese people from other parts of the, you know, the country. So right now, I think it's Shenzhen as the city with more than 10 million people, 70% of them actually are not actually based in, they have their migrants, you know, population. So I think that's, you know, one of the, you know, those people are the main contributors of the human capital. So if we call that a, you know, the overseas Chinese or the diaspora Chinese, they are contribute to this physical capital. Now we see this migrant workers contribute this, you know, the human capital. And many of them would actually work harder for less, which I think is one of the reason that, you know, could turn Shenzhen into, you know, the manufacturing powerhouse of the world. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the, you know, most prominent example of the special economic zone. But I think Shenzhen doesn't fit into the model of the charter city, but it has some of the feature of that, but not all fit into the definition of the charter city.
It's really interesting listening to this because it strikes me that the story we're hearing is one of a new start almost. It's almost like the American dream, but in Asia at the moment, where what we're hearing is a story about people establishing almost a new form of sovereignty, whether it's economic as opposed to political. And with that, there comes, you know, overseas investment to create infrastructure, internal mobility to help with the human resourcing, which then leads to economic growth. Which if I go back to thinking about the stories of the American dream, the big thing that distinguishes it from what we have in the Shenzhen story is this idea of political independence, of the formation of a new, almost sovereign entity. And when I've heard you both explain the differences you've observed in the special economic zone versus a charter city, it strikes me that the large hurdle is sovereignty, that the big distinguishing feature that no one has gotten to is this idea of having separate institutions. Is that something that you think will ever be overcome?
There's a couple of things I'd say about that. I mean, the other, just as a sort of an aside, the other really interesting future development that relates to Shenzhen and other cities in Guangzhou is the establishment of what's being referred to as the Greater Bay Area, right? Which is sort of bringing together Guangzhou, the nine cities in Guangzhou, plus Macau, plus Hong Kong as a very significant economic and social location. I mean, that is the Greater Bay Area is home to 70 million people, right? I mean, it's not small, right? It's massive. It also has an economy, I think, that would rank at about the 15th largest in the world, larger than the economy of Australia, interestingly. And at the moment, it sits there with three different political, legal, you know, jurisdictional systems, different currencies. So the complexity of moving from the charter city concept to bringing that together will be really interesting. But just come back to your point. I mean, I think there's a lot of challenges around charter cities, and certainly this idea of creating a sort of semi-sovereign jurisdiction is a really important element. And obviously, as we said, there are some examples in Hong Kong and Singapore and some sort of city states around the world. But I don't think, I mean, that is a very important element of it, because that's how you free up the movement of people, movement of data and trade and investment. But I do think a really important starting point when you're talking about new city development is really understanding what is the purpose of that city going to be. I mean, it's all very well to say we're going to go and build a new city, but what is the vision for that city? What is the industry that city is going to conduct? How's that going to evolve over time? And what makes the location for that city an important location for that city? Because, you know, there's a significant amount of capital that goes into the development of cities. And the last thing you want is what might be referred to as a white elephant, where some, you know, a city has been developed, but nobody wants to go there, right? Or no, there's no particular reason for people to be there. So I think a whole starting point around why should a city be developed in a particular location? What is the purpose of that city? What is the vision for that city? How is that city going to be managed and led as it evolves over time? And then, in addition to that, what is the system that you want to put in place to enable that city to be managed politically, legally, and in other ways?
It makes me think a little bit about the other kind of city that gets brought up quite often these days, which again, are a little bit like the chartered city in concept, but different. And perhaps, Julian, if you'd like to turn your mind to it, it would be interesting to hear how you compare and contrast the idea of a smart city with perhaps the charter city concept or on special economic zones.
Let me start from my basic premise, which is that smart cities are significantly enabled, or their development is significantly enabled by digitalization. That's critical. But a smart city is more than a digital city, right? So smart cities are cities that very much focus on the needs of the population of that city, the individuals in that city, and think about what is best for those people. Citizen centricity is the way that they describe it. And I think smart cities are cities that have a plan, but the plan is centered around improving the lives, social, and economic, and increasingly now with ESG sustainability as well, improving the lives of its people. But digitalization obviously is a very, very significant factor, and increasingly so these days, right? I mean, technological disruption is something that is a term that is used very widely, but that fundamentally is what's happening. We're going through massive change in terms of technology, developments, digitalization. And cities that can build the right digital infrastructure to overlay on their other physical infrastructure and create an environment which enables the citizens to have access to the use of that infrastructure, which is really important. It's not just about building the Wi-Fi systems and putting the sensors in place. It's actually about being able to create an environment where, you know, every citizen can have access to whatever that brings, right? And that what that would bring would be amenity, mobility, access to services, access to employment opportunities, access to work-life balance. So to me, smart cities are driven fundamentally by leadership that focuses on what the citizens need, thinking about the future. And obviously COVID has had a pretty interesting impact on, you know, the way people think about cities now. But the digitalization in terms of the physical infrastructure, but also the soft infrastructure around that, is going to be increasingly a very, very significant element of, you know, how cities, these cities evolve. And if you think about the Asian region in particular, I mean, we have examples of, in relative terms, world-class cities when it comes to digitalization in cities like Shanghai, Hong Kong, Singapore, Seoul, you know, Tokyo. None of those cities have yet fully achieved what they need to achieve in terms of creating the platform, creating the technology, creating the digitalization. But we do have world-class cities in Asia. We also have cities that are in developing countries that have a very long way to go in terms of, you know, evolving into what we might refer to as smart cities, right? So it's a really interesting time for cities, actually. But I think it's really important that we clearly focus on what are the sort of the key building blocks for establishment of a smart city. And that does start with the people. That starts with a government that understands what the people need. And it's a government that engages proactively two-way between its people and itself, right? Between the governments and the people, to understand what is required and then enable that requirement to be achieved, with digitalization being a very, very important enabler to that.
And that's quite interesting to hear, because from my personal background, I've now started to frame this in my mind as being about people when it's about the smart cities, about purpose for the chartered cities, and about process for the special economic zones. And yeah. So what I'm interested to hear from both of you, and perhaps we can start with Professor Duncan, do you think a time is coming where we bring all three concepts together and bring people, process, and purpose into one place?
The concept of the special economic zones and, you know, the smart cities have been implemented, I think it's at least in China, in many places. I think it's, you know, I said it's special economic zones were starting, you know, about 40 years ago. And the smart city ideas were actually quite recent. But I think they have been implemented by the big cities like Beijing, Shanghai, Hangzhou, and, you know, the Chengdu, Chongqing. I think this is kind of like, you know, the Julian pointed out that, you know, it's about using this, you know, the digital technology to empower both the public and also the, you know, the private, to actually to provide more efficient services. But when we actually talk about the special economic zones, which are kind of like a more focused on, you know, industrial production, at least in its early stage of this, you know, development, while the smart city is more a concept about provides, you know, more efficient and services. I think it's, we can all have experienced this type of the services during this COVID time. I think that's a, you know, one example, I think, is in China. Kind of, they all use the smartphones. The we have this app that's so-called the health code. I think it's whenever you go, you have to show your health codes to just show that whether you are being safe to travel or, you know, to enter a building. So I think those kind of like two things were represents so like a different stage of those kind of like economic, you know, development. I think the special economic zones is more focused on the early stage, which is about industrial development. While the, you know, smart city is actually moving to this post-industrial, you know, era, which I think is we are more focused on to provide, you know, service. And that includes health, security, other type of the services, which is to make this, you know, the life, the quality of life, to improve the quality of life. So I think that's two things. Could certainly we can see that's the, you know, the different stage of this development. It's come back to this, you know, charter city idea, because I think it's a still a vision, you know, because I think that the main idea about, you know, the charter city is trying to promote the self-governing, you know, which is a separate, you know, jurisdiction or separate legal system. I think this could, you know, potentially have some possibility to implement in some places where they don't have a well-established rules or legal system. But for, you know, places already have those kind of like, you know, they're on the path to moving from the industrial stage to just post-industrial stage, which I think as charter cities is not the next stage for them. I think it's more important the plan or city for some of the places where they didn't have this industrial base in the first place. So that's this kind of like a differences between the three concepts.
And it's interesting to think about it in that sense of economic development, because one of the subjects we've been touching on recently is of course, the potential for the developing economies to leapfrog. And if I think about the role of robotics and other digitized methods now to potentially not shortcut, but to accelerate the process piece of economic development, where you can then potentially look to digitize from day one by investing in robotics in your manufacturing industries, etc., I wonder now if, you know, we are coming to a point where there might be an interesting experiment, hypothetically, something like the Japanese elder care initiatives that have used robots, where we get to a charter city looking after our aging population, empowered by robotics and the like, bringing all three of these concepts quite closely together. Julian, that's to me like a utopian vision, where I can see these emerging trends coming together to take the lovely little golden loop. And I wonder if you have seen any trends of your own that you think might feed into these concepts.
Well, I mean, just to come back to your point around people, purpose, and process, I mean, they are all elements that have to be brought together in an optimal way for cities to develop, whether they happen to be economic zones, smart cities, or charter cities. I mean, I think they're variations, interesting variations on a broad theme. And I understand exactly what Mr. Yu was saying about, you know, the stages of evolution, if you like, through the industrialization and post-industrialization stages. But I do think that, you know, the most important starting point is what is the purpose? What is the purpose and how does that look after or handle or better the lives of the people? Now, this whole question of digitalization, it's been an ongoing trend for, you know, a number of years now, technological disruption, but certainly COVID, I think, has precipitated an acceleration in thinking around the need for digitalization of infrastructure and digitalization of cities or you know, places where people, locations where people, communities live. So I think we will see significant progress made over the next 5 to 10 years. There are huge things around the corner. 5G is coming. That will be a massive enabler across a range of areas. Security, as you mentioned, healthcare, but government services generally. So I think, you know, cities need, the leaders, the managers of cities certainly need to be across these key themes that will impact the way cities behave, operate and evolve over time, demographic change, technology, resource scarcity, and be able to respond to that, but largely driven by technological advances, right? Technological advances. And that goes to everything. I mean, yes, we talk about access to health services. We talk about access to work, employment, education, but it also, you know, digitalization of cities, smart cities should enable cities to better manage their environmental footprint, their climate readiness, if you like, their resilience, not just to environmental issues, which is very, very important because, as you know, it seems that in our region in particular, we seem to have increasing numbers of unexpected or unanticipated climatic events, right? Catastrophes that cities need to increasingly become resilient in being able to handle, but it also should increase the efficiency by which the city operates, whether it's in mobility, employment, or management of scarce resources, but fundamentally driven towards, you know, improving the amenity, the quality of life, the economic outlook for that city, for the people.
And Professor Zhang, I wonder whether you have any views on the trends that you think may support or potentially even impede progress when it comes to development of cities.
The technology it's a key platform to help us to transform the city from this traditional city to the smart city. But I think that there's also rising concerns about, you know, where are we actually too dependent on technology or too dependent on the data. There is some debate already has been raised in, you know, especially since the COVID. I think that's about where we actually going to see this technology. If we actually be too dependent on the technology, what will happen if there's a disruption of this technology or if there are any cyber attack on that? I think that's one of the main concern, right? It's data breach, all this kind of like a privacy issue, how we actually going to protect our personal data. So there's a kind of like always a balance between the efficiency and also the security. I think this is something we can actually, I think the smart city is more like a means rather than the ends. I think this is something I would call it, because we really want it to have a better quality of life. So, but it's not just about the technology. So give you one example. I think is I grew up in a city, which is in China, which has a reputation for its slow pace, you know, Chengdu, which is a city at being very slow, but it's now has been a city which has been on the upfront on the smart city. The city has been, you know, first on this using this gigabyte, you know, network. So I think this is kind of like it also makes people to think about how can we actually combine those kind of efficiency and also, you know, how the pace, right? We want to just both have a maintain this balance of this, the efficiency and also, and a quality of life. So technology is just the means. It's not the ends of this, you know, the developments.
I agree entirely with that. And I also definitely agree with your points about the increased risk that comes with technological advance in digitalization of cities in terms of both privacy and its resilience as a system. Because you think about, you know, cities that are highly digitalized, a lot of interconnecting systems there, and disruption could be, you know, catastrophic in some cases. So the whole question around protection of, so two more P's to add to your people, purpose and process: planning and protection, right? Protection is about ensuring the city is resilient, not just in an environmental way, but across everything, right? Resilient as a city, it continues to be a city that operates in a sustainable, again, using the broad term, the definition of the word sustainable, operates in a sustainable way and protects itself and protects its citizen from disruption, whatever that disruption might be. I think the other point about cities, however, is that when I talk about trends, I mean, planning is critical for cities, and planning has become incredibly complex. You know, there is no silver bullet when it comes to planning. Things can, unexpected disruption can occur, as happened around this time last year. And we've all had to cope with what that actually means and adapt to the environment that that's created. So I think planning will become increasingly complex. And all I can say to that at the moment is it's difficult to know where cities will go. It's difficult to know how people feel about what they want their city to provide for them, given the experience that we've all had over the last 12 months or so. But I'm sure there will be change. And the critical point, coming back to a point I mentioned earlier, is that the city leaders really truly engage with the people of the city and understand what the city, what the people need, what is most important to its citizens, and then be able to develop the city based on those. So make people part of the solution. Don't dream up in some government office what you think the solution is and tell the people. They've got to be part of the process, because it's an incredibly complex world, and you know, you need to be able to sort of really focus on what is good for the citizens of the city.
It is quite interesting when we started talking about the distinction that a charter city has being potentially something to do with sovereignty. And we think now about the sovereignty of the human being, of the citizens in themselves. So one of the topics that often comes up with talk about technology and how it's evolving so quickly is how much choice does an individual truly have in these decisions and where they choose to live their life? So this idea, for example, and the trade-off between efficiency and economic development, do you get to say, actually, I want to live here, but I don't want to live that way? Or is this what the next charter city is about, a charter city that's totally analog, offline, off-grid, where people can choose a slower pace of life? It's quite interesting to think about where your choices lie. So as a sovereign, you might be thinking about the trade-off between land and sovereignty and control of your population for the greater good. As an individual within that structure, do you have a choice about whether you trade off your privacy, your security, your analog or not otherwise lifestyle versus, you know, the progress that your economy is heading for? I think these are quite interesting subjects. And one thing I wanted to touch on just before we end is this idea about the other parts of the world. So we've spoken a bit about the American dream. We've spoken a bit about economies the size of Australia, about where Asia is headed.
Well, let's go back to this kind of like a, you know, the original idea of the charter city. See, this kind of like a plan, the proposal could actually help to lift many of the African out of the poverty. I think it's by creating this kind of like experiment, sort of like an experiment, so you can actually move people to this better, you know, governed cities to actually create this kind of like a place which would later on be scale up to other part of the continent. I think that Africa was one of the, you know, the main target for this kind of like, you know, for this kind of like experiments. Because this kind of idea is a little bit reminds of this, the so-called, you know, the development aid. So when you actually, when this United States and Europe, when they actually started to giving aid to, you know, the developing countries, Africa in particular, they just try to kind of like not just only giving the capital, but also try to coach them or teach them, you know, what would be the best way to develop. I think it's there creates this kind of model, how this is how a country should be run. And this is sort of like how the economy should develop. Even recommend this kind of like what we so-called the Washington Consensus that is given to this, you know, developing countries that, okay, this is something you guys should all follow. But I think it turned out it was not really successful, right? I think it's many of countries didn't actually developed, even they take those kind of like, you know, the advice. So this kind of like a concept of the charter city, which is also kind of like try to create this model and replicate the success in other part of the world to the Africa. Theoretically, it might be very appealing, but I think it's in practice. Personally, I don't think this might be the model could work.
That's really, really interesting. I mean, two thoughts. One is, when you think about developing economies, African countries or African cities or even Southeast Asian cities, one massive opportunity that they seem to have in common is youth, right? The median age of their populations are generally very young. And I think actually from memory, African countries have, you know, the vast majority of the youngest median ages in the world, right? So there's an enormous amount of potential there amongst young people if you can empower them and give them the opportunity, provide them with the education that they need to enable them to actually take the country forward and find meaningful employment. And I think part of that is about technology and enabling those countries to leapfrog, as you said earlier, the more developed economies in terms of the way they evolve as cities or countries. The other point I would make is that there are very few cities in the world that can operate in total isolation of what's going on around them, right? We live in a very interconnected world. Our global economy is very interconnected. Yes, it's been disrupted in the last 12 months as a result of travel restrictions, but it is nevertheless a globalized economy, and countries or cities that want to continue to evolve and develop in a sustainable, economically sustainable way to improve the lives of their citizens need to be able to interact and respond to the opportunities, but also the risks presented by that connectivity that they have with other locations. So, you know, the idea of, you know, we can set up a charter city and we can live in peaceful isolation and stop the world. I want to get off. I want to go and live in this safe haven. Yes, good idea. But for that city to evolve economically, it's got to interact and respond to what is happening around it.
Also, it's going back to something you raised earlier around the need to be very careful about meeting the purpose of the population. Traditionally, these are hard populations to get purpose from because they're quite firm, lots of conviction, but not necessarily planned or coordinated. And so I think it could be very challenging to actually form a coherent purpose within some of these populations. So with that, I'd love to hear just a few parting thoughts from each of you. Perhaps we could start with Professor Deng. If you could share any thoughts you have that come up through this conversation, where your thinking is sort of headed towards now.
Just to give some final thoughts about the three concepts, you know, the charter city, the special economic zones, and the smart city. I think this is kind of like to me, if from this science perspective, I think this is kind of like each of them were having this kind of like a long some impacts on the relationship between the state and the markets. I think that's the something I would say, that you know, all three forms, we have lasting influence on the state and market relations, particularly after this, you know, the COVID era. But they actually represent different type of change. If you look at special economic zones, it's kind of like an experiment which puts, you know, the market ahead of the state, was trying to, you know, make the market work. And the charter city, it's kind of goes further, is trying to promote this idea of this even self-governance. While the smart city, I think this is a different type of trend. It's kind of like empower the governments more. I think it's to help to enable the governments to provide a better service, more efficient service, make better decisions. So I think this, it's actually, we're kind of like a different type of the trends in terms of the future. But I think it's, as I said, it's probably represents, you know, as a the evolution of our own, both the cities and also the economic development in general, right? We could actually having try to combine those kind of ideas.
Just on the three concepts, I mean, I think special economic zones and then charter cities are increasing developments, if you like, in enabling an environment to be created for economic development, industrialization, and hopefully improvement in the well-being of the people who live in those locations. And smart cities is an overlay across all of this, I think. So to me, they're all really quite interesting variations on a broad theme around economic development and social well-being. To me, the fundamental point is around defining the purpose, focusing on the people that live in that location, what is it they need and how best to service or look after them or to serve their needs. It requires careful planning, but it's not just about a government making decisions. The government has to work with the full resources of the city. And by that, I mean the citizens, the business community, the academic community, to ensure that all of the skills and capabilities of the city are brought to bear in what is now an increasingly complex world, right? So planning has become very complex. Technology, digitalization, I think is a massive theme. It's a massive opportunity. It also carries some significant risks that we've talked about in terms of disruption. But the context there is that the digitalization, the infrastructure, the access to that digital infrastructure is there as an enabler for the city to achieve its broader objectives of economic development, social well-being, management of resources, etc. So digitalization is not, as you said earlier, Mr. Yu, is not the end, it's the means to enable cities to develop in the appropriate way.
I think that's a fantastic way to close off this conversation. We've covered quite a lot, and I think what I've taken away from it is really this idea that as cities develop, a lot of consciousness goes into balancing tensions, whether it's between state and economy, whether it's between state and person, whether it's between planning to optimize disruptions or the technologies that are emerging and the protections of the people. Thank you both very much, and I hope to hear from you both again.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the OnFifth Podcast.